James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and also simulcasting on eCity's Stargate, where you can actually go in and interact with a lot of the guests. There's so much going on right now. I'm going to skip housekeeping because there's so much. I mean, the Schumann's resonance is off the scale. There's influx of energy right now. The aurora energies are off the scale, and it's affecting a lot of people right now, and people are having all kinds of processes happening. And I think can't think of a better guest to have on right now than Dr. Alex Bloom, and he's a clinical psychologist. And how long have you been doing this? For
about 15 years.
About 15 years.
Yeah.
And he's integrating a whole different type of psychology, and I wanted to talk about that. And you've been on ABC and K2 and AM Northwest, and they bring you on as a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
and it's an honor to have you on our show.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
And so there's so many different ways we can do this. I wanted to talk first about what you're trying to integrate, a whole different, like a mindfulness mm-hmm. into psychology. Can you mm-hmm. talk a little bit about that and how that's
yeah.
That works?
Well, I kind of have a professional hat that I wear,
yeah.
and then kind of a writer hat and kind of the avant-garde part of me.
Okay.
So why don't we talk with the professional part first, and then we'll transition.
Okay, great.
So, clinical psychologist, been seeing clients for about 15 years or so. Absolutely love what I do. One of my specialties is working with mindfulness meditation. Mm-hmm. So when I was in graduate school, I contributed to the research and did my thesis and dissertation on the subject, and have been running groups and teaching clients how to practice mindfulness and using it for a whole host of conditions. For a long time, and I've had my own daily practice for close to 20 years.
Uh-huh.
So I think that that's an important aspect when you're going to help others with meditation in particular, that you have some sort of background that you bring to the table, and you don't just read from a book, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I've run groups, you know, of all different shapes and sizes for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, really love what I do. So that's kind of during my work hours, and then I come home, take my work hat off, and then I've been working on this for about 10, 15 years or so, and I'll tell you a little story in terms of how all this unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the winter or so of 2006, so we kind of have to go back in time. And I stumbled across this idea that I had never heard before, and it was this concept that we create or co-create our reality.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, that was new to me.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And then a couple months later, there was a big movie that came out that I think you saw too, called
yeah.
The Secret.
Yeah, The Secret, yeah.
And, you know, I think it did a lot of good in some ways in terms of getting this concept out, you know, mm-hmm. often referred to as law of attraction.
Yeah.
Some people like that phrasing, some people don't. But just this idea that if nothing else, we contribute to creating our reality if we don't at least create, if folks aren't, you know, jiving with that message. And so that really stuck with me. And it stuck with me until I started graduate school that coming fall, because the main message that I kept hearing when I would, you know, read more about this is that thoughts are things, and
yeah.
that, you know, our thoughts kind of project and our life kind of boomerangs back to us, what we put out into the quantum field, right,
uh-huh.
if you wish. And so, you know, we create with our thoughts, our feelings kind of add fuel to have that come into manifestation more quickly. And then, of course, we have to take action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you just visualize and think, but just sit on your couch and never do anything,
yeah.
you're not going to have things flow in, right? So that kind of was in the background. And then I start graduate school. And as I'm entering the program, this doctoral program, I'm learning about what psychology really is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you break it down, it's thoughts, emotions, and behavior.
Yeah.
And so for me, it kind of struck a chord, and I thought, oh. And just one day, I remember in class, it was like this lightning bolt. And I thought, you know, I wonder if we can map these two ideas on with one another, if you can use psychology in kind of a new way to help with manifestation and kind of co-creating reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I went on this quest for the next few years of trying to search and find books that really cover the subject in the way, at least that I was starting to conceptualize it. And I really couldn't find anything. And it really frustrated me at first.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, well, gosh, maybe I need to be the source, you know,
yeah.
and create that. So then that kind of started this whole nother chapter, which was, well, what is psychology? If we understand the what aspect of
uh-huh.
things, that we, you know, co-create a reality with source. And call it whatever you want to call it. Sometimes I use the acronym GLUE.
Yeah.
God, love, the universe or energy, there's some invisible agent that has a sticking power that has all of this kind of...
The one consciousness.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Unified field.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're all saying the same thing. And so it took me about a decade or so to really kind of peruse all the research. You know, I read research articles and books, and then I moved out of the traditional field of psychology, you know, which has over 800 forms of therapy.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? And within all of those forms that kind of I was looking at, there are a few that continue to rise to the surface, and these are called evidence-based therapies. There's a lot of research on this, and so as I was kind of perusing these different forms of therapy, I thought, you know, there are so many of these that are saying similar things. It's the same underlying mechanism, but they're all kind of having their own phrasing, their own reference to these ideas. And so I started thinking, I wonder how many of these main ideas or ingredients, if you will, are there that you keep seeing that are recycled. And then once you step outside of therapy, formal therapies, then what about self-help books, trainings that you might go to, or seminars, retreats, etc.? And so after, you know, about a good decade or so of kind of burning the midnight oil in my free time, I feel like at this point I've been able to succinctly summarize what these points are. And so I'm looking forward to then now kind of moving beyond kind of being dark and having the radar turned off and kind of bring it out to the world.
So you're kind of simplifying things, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I love this. One of my teachers, I say what he said, everything begins at one point.
Mm.
And everything comes back to that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting when you think about it. And then he said, be the point, you know,
cool.
Which is interesting. And, you know, and if you can stay centered in that point, but we get pulled off of that point by all these traumas and
mm-hmm.
triggers and all these other things pull us into all these different dramas.
That's right.
And I know the mindfulness aspect helps you get back to that point.
When I work with my clients, my common buzz phrase is awareness is step one.
Yeah.
That you have to come back and flip your radar on before you can then move to the next stage, which is, okay, what do I do about this? What's mm-hmm. the next step that logically makes sense? But if you don't have the awareness there, then you just keep fumbling along.
And I know you probably have some tools, but when you come across somebody that's in extreme denial,
mm-hmm.
and they're blame, you know, everything's somebody mm-hmm. else, everything's
and projecting
and blame.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of that even in the spiritual community right now,
mm-hmm.
especially the UFO community.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, there's all these things playing out, like narcissism, blame, projection,
mm-hmm.
You know, all these programs are playing out because
right.
the whole Earth is undergoing this major shift or transition. We could deal with a lot of different things, but what's the best way to help people to get out of denial? They're in denial and they're just in projection and blame.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard in kind of outside of, you know, a therapy room to work on that because there's hidden benefits that people get from using those defense mechanisms, right? It kind of keeps them in that framework of, whew, I don't have to look at me. It's all about kind of pushing it on to other people.
Like victims get emotional or financial support from others by playing that victim role.
Yeah, that's right.
And so there's all these different, I call it this, it's like this hamster wheel. You've got the victim, the persecutor, and the savior.
Mm-hmm.
And that wheel's spinning and we keep jumping into some spot on that wheel. And if the saviors don't take care of the victims the way they expect to be taken care of, then mm-hmm. they become the persecutors.
Right.
And then the savior lashes out. I mean the victim lashes out, and they become the you know, attacking the savior. You
mm-hmm.
know? And it's just like in this big wheel.
Yep.
And everybody's, you know, and then you need another savior to save the savior.
How many layers does it go, right?
So, yeah, it's this big hamster wheel, and you just got to like pull out of it and go, wait a second,
mm-hmm.
and just say, well, everybody's creating things here. Everybody's getting something from it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's learning. And sometimes they might need, that lesson might have to get exponentially stronger and stronger and stronger until they're ready.
Yeah.
To let go of that program.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm working with clients, I'll often kind of I'm not going to come forward and say, hey, this is what's going on, right? Because that
yeah.
might be too much information for them. You said a phrase last night that continues to strike a chord in me. And if I mess it, you'll have to figure it out for me. But it's something along the lines of, don't fire hose the seedling.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Don't water seedlings with a fire hose.
There it is, yeah.
And I've been accused of that sometimes. And sometimes you see that button and you just go, come on, can we go forward?
Yeah, yeah.
And you just like, bam, you hit the button because you go, well, mm-hmm. it's not going anywhere. We're not going to go forward now. And so,
yeah. I have a visual that often comes in my mind because I'm a very visual person. But I think about it when I notice a block that's kind of coming up with a client, that it's like a water level. And so if my water level is wanting to come up of like, hey, we can go here, this is what I see is like the next step for you, and they're lingering and staying at that water level, then I can't continue to rise until I come back down and meet the client where they're at. And so sometimes I'll even kind of quote-unquote play dumb in terms of, huh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you had mentioned something like this recently. Uh-huh. I wonder what that's about, you know?
Yeah.
And you just kind of let them marinate it with that for a little while.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of conceptualize it that you're not necessarily going to have big breakthroughs quickly, but you're planting seeds. And then over time, when you continue to come back to that, then sometimes there's an aha, you know, the seedling starts to sprout.
Yeah.
So.
Because that whole thing I've seen, you know, even myself and my own, you know, you got to become the witness and always observe yourself and take personal responsibility for what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm always, there's two parts of me. One is watching me, mm-hmm. the observer.
That's right.
And sometimes the other part is freaking out.
Yeah.
And I'm going, okay, wait, pull it back.
Yeah.
Pull it back.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, but if you can't develop that witness side, the observer, and on yourself, not everybody else, on yourself,
mm-hmm.
that's so imperative right now if we're
trying
to get through these shifts and these changes.
Here we are back to my phrase, awareness is step one, you know?
Yeah.
And so this is, James, the beauty of mindfulness so much. Because when you work like in what I do, you know, in like a clinical setting, and you're helping clients, first of all, you have that kind of context where it's outside of the everyday world. You know, that when they step into my office, it's like a bank vault.
Uh-huh.
And there's no judgment, and it's just, you know, hey, what's going on, and how can you come alongside me? We'll lift up the hood together. I'm like a coach in some ways, and just say, hey, how can we look at things? You know, sometimes those things might be difficult to look at. But when you bring that spirit of mindfulness into it, part of what that means is not just being in the present moment, but another real strong attribute of what mindfulness means is doing so in a non-judgmental way.
Yeah.
And that's the critical ingredient. Because when that awareness starts to come up and there's that sense of, oh, ouch, here's a wound. You know, here's something that maybe I need to look at that's really uncomfortable. We start to zoom out, just like you were saying, and kind of playing that witness. And so oftentimes I'll write a visual up on the whiteboard for clients, and it's a several-tier process. So the first is if they are in the bubble, which means that their thoughts, almost like a cartoon bubble, you know, above their head.
Yeah.
If that thought is kind of playing out for them and they can't disconnect from that, that's what I call coming from, which means that person at that moment really isn't so much in control. That thought is leading them and guiding them.
Yeah.
And so that's the puppet master. Then they're the little marionettes on the string, and whatever this thought is telling me, I'm not even at a point that I can question that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of step one, to kind of break that stronghold.
Yeah.
And then over time, because this is a skill, right? With any skill, it takes practice to cultivate it. When they start to step back, now they're getting into what I call little o observing, which means that instead of this coming from mode, they can zoom out just enough to kind of look at whatever it is that is troubling them. But now they've freed themselves up consciousness-wise to be able to say, okay, so now I can look at instead of coming from.
Yeah.
And now that I've zoomed out a bit, I can recognize that this, let's say, thought in particular, I used to run a chronic pain group for close to 10 years, so in that case, it might be pain that they're feeling in their body. But whatever it is, in this case, we'll go with the thought, that thought doesn't define me in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of the present moment, but it's not all of the present moment.
Yeah.
So when they zoom out, they're able to look at other things. And this is where we start to bring in curiosity. So what else is happening literally right here in this large context that we call the now? You know, what are you feeling in your body? What else can you tap into sense-wise? You know, but it's little O, which means that it's easy psychologically because they're still so close to that thought. It's almost like a black hole that then they slip on a banana peel and then they go back into it. See? Yeah. And so when they zoom out, there's often still a sense of judgment of, oh, I've been practicing this mindfulness thing for a little while and I don't feel really like I'm getting anywhere, or I keep having those banana peels, as I often call them. And so it's a little O. And so the recognition here is to know that if there's judgment present, it's an invitation to let you know you can continue to zoom out.
Yeah.
And then the next step, once we get out there, this is then called big O, observer mode.
Yeah.
And observer mode is different from observing because there's no longer a sense or feel of judgment. Uh-huh. It's just that silent witness, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And that's really the goal. And I think for everyone listening to this who wants to practice meditation, that's the ultimate aim. And I use that word very specifically. An aim is a different from a goal.
Yeah.
So when we go into meditation, if we go into it saying, okay, I'm going to practice this thing called being here in the present, and then we slip out of it, and then we come back in, and we do that whole kind of dance that we do, that then that judgment is really present.
Exactly, pulls you right out.
Yeah, exactly. That it's this recognition of, oh, okay, well, I'm observing, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But if I go into it with a goal, now you're having expectations.
Yeah.
And when the expectations are there, that's the perfect rich environment to not have a very good mindfulness session, right?
Yeah, we see that a lot with, I tell people when they talk about meditation, and they said, I have to get to no thought.
Right.
I said, well, that's a thought.
There's an agenda.
I go,
see?
There's a thought right there.
That's
you
it.
Just sabotage yourself.
Yeah.
And then I said, you know, your mind is going to run.
Yeah.
It's going to run. And just sit with it. Let it run.
Yeah.
When it runs, don't judge yourself on what you're thinking or what's happening. Just relax. Come back into that observer state. Let it run.
Yeah.
And it'll run out of gas.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you go to the next level. And it'll run again.
Yeah.
And you just let it run.
Yeah.
And just go back. You can focus on your breath, your heart, or bring it back. And don't beat yourself up because your mind's running. Because that's what it does.
That's it. And it's what minds do.
Yeah. And they run out of gas.
Yeah. That's right.
Eventually they run out of gas. Just let it run out of gas and then come back to the moment. And the more you practice them, pretty soon you just sit there and bam, you're there. You know, you're in that mode. But it takes a while. It's like in communication, when you're communicating with these higher dimensional beings and things like that, in the beginning, you know, you're doing all your practices, you're meditating, you're cleaning up your body, you're doing all this intense spiritual work, and that's your roadmap, you know, on how to do this to get there. But once you get there, you don't need the roadmap anymore.
Yeah.
You're just there.
That's it.
And other people ask me that, they go, how do you make contact? And I go, how do you not be in contact?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's constant.
That's right.
It's always going on. Because you're in the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness and all planes and dimensions throughout the multiverse. So it's this massive phone book.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always in contact. Whether or not we're aware of that contact, that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always tell people, you can't separate yourself from omnipresence.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's just a bad joke we're playing on ourselves.
That's so true.
So how do I, just the thing of saying, how do I contact, you know, a Pleiadian, or how do I contact a ascended master or whatever else? And I said, well, just, you're asking how, but the answer is there too at the same time. The question and the answer are both together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the how. When you're asking how, you're not acknowledging that you are in contact, because you can't separate yourself from contact.
Right.
It's going on. You have to raise your awareness to that, you know, that, okay, I'm just going to practice listening, you know, deep listening, and see what happens.
And mindfulness can be a foundation, you know, of kind of building this muscle of listening, like you said, of awareness.
And feeling, you know.
You know,
that's why I tell people, and this is getting on a wild side, but God's a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And people wait for this voice, this booming voice, to go, James.
Yeah. Right, right.
Supposed to be doing this. And it just doesn't work that way.
No.
You go into the heart, you feel your soul sits right next to the heart. It's like that's your, and it's measurable. And your emotional body is closer to your soul than your intellect. Your intellect is just a drop in the sea of consciousness. Mm-hmm. But when you get into the feeling body and the soul, everything is recorded. Everything you've ever done, ever been, is recorded as feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you expand in that love and joy and bliss, the more you go, you expand out in awareness. You become more, there's beings along the way that are operating on that same frequency that you're going to have contact with.
Yeah.
It comes, I tell people contact comes with enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not just UFOs, it's ascended masters and God beings and other dimensional beings that are beyond your wildest dreams. You
know? And so often we get hyper-focused on reaching outside of us,
yeah.
You know? And now it's, of course, a trite saying, but we have to go within, right? The inner work.
Yeah, so. There's such a proclivity to externalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
If I fix this, you know, if I conquer this person, you know, then I'll be okay. No, you're conquering yourself.
Yeah.
The whole time you're conquering yourself. I try to tell that. I mean, we get a lot of people that I guess we upset now and then here, you know, they come and attack and everything else. Like, are you attacking yourself, you know? And they're like, I'm going to destroy you, you know? And I said, you're only establishing your own ignorance and character, even not mine. I'm okay with the source and everything. I know what I'm doing, but have at it, you know?
Yeah.
It always backfires, but...
Because from a spiritual perspective, there is no out there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all an illusion because we're all connected.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, but I think we're so programmed that everything's external.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, we were talking about earlier about the first three chakras, which are survival, sex, and power, and how we're so controlled by those three chakras. And when you get into the heart, you're outside of that control.
Mm-hmm.
So the media, you know, the whole music industry, the movie industry, the commercial industry, all that stuff is all hitting you on survival, sex, and power. That's how they're hooking you, getting you to buy their product and everything. You know, if you if you have all this money, you're going to be powerful. You're going to buy the fancy car and drink the right beer and get the bronze babe.
Right.
You know,
right.
That whole program. You know, and
Madison
and, you know, people,
Avenue.
Yeah, that social engineering, people have no idea how much they've been social engineered. And I find in my own life, I go, wow, that was weird, that archetype.
Yeah.
That I think I need to connect with is really not real.
Mm-hmm.
It was given to me by something else, by some other social conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah, so often, you know, to introduce kind of a buzz phrase from psychology, it's called locus of control.
Yeah.
And basically what that means is that you see this often with depression, that if folks have an external locus of control, that they don't really have a sense of empowerment. They're victims, so to speak. And so the common phrase associated with this is then learned helplessness, that people over time start to give up. They say, oh, I can't fix this. This continues to happen and show up. And so when you can teach folks to have an internal locus of control, then they take their power back. And now when you apply that to this understanding from a spiritual perspective of vibration, right?
Yeah.
And like you can be in control of your vibration. And why is that important? Because whatever you put out is going to boomerang back to you energetically.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, actually too, when you go after a high frequency, it's going to be accelerated and amplified, so it's going to come back even faster. But I want to get back to that the secret, and we talked about that, and you came up with the same analogy I had, that you're not going to manifest squat diddly until you get through your wounds and traumas and childhood trauma, past life trauma, everything else. And I like that saying, too, is worry is a form of prayer. You know, the more you worry about something, you're going to draw it to you. And, and so you have to go find out where that worry is coming from. What you know, where's your lack pattern coming from?
Yeah.
You know, were you in the dark ages where it was just hopeless?
You know,
And do you have lives been that you haven't dealt with? Or do you have childhood trauma where you lived in poverty, you know? Or, you know, same thing. You know, I was talking earlier about getting kicked out of college. Not really kicked out, but the teacher said, you have a nap, you might as well not come.
This is a psychology class here.
Yeah. I wrote a thesis on past life trauma.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and it's really well documented. It was about all the people that would remember past lives, their house, their address.
Yeah.
You know, very well documented.
Sure.
How people would have phobia, fear of drowning, and they're raised in the middle of the desert. They haven't even seen the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, child prodigies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how they would, you know, how can they just pick up an instrument and play it?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, things like that. And I had all these documented things, and I got an F.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Too outside of mainstream.
Dead, you're dead. You know, that's what they told me.
And, yeah.
And you need to go back and rethink this. And I said, no, because mm-hmm. I was, at that time, I was already aware of a lot of my past lives.
You know, yeah. So. Yeah.
But it's interesting. But it seems like psychology's come a long way, and you're actually helping it take the next step, even to come even further.
That's my hope.
Yeah.
You know, of using psychology in a new way, that, you know, we're on this precipice of, call it ascension, call it an awakening, call it whatever you want to phrase you want to put there, but it's a time of big shifts.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the first signs that you're going to see with this shift is people, when they start to wake up, they're not fully awake yet, and they're just being roused, just like
yeah.
when we wake someone,
uh-huh.
and they're groggy, and they're going to get really angry.
Yeah.
And so what do we see as soon as we turn on the TV?
Yeah.
Right? Upheaval and anger and all these
yeah.
sorts of things.
Exactly.
And
how
so, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, being able to give folks who are on this kind of spiritual path very practical tools, that's an important value of mine.
Throw your TV out.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
It's yeah. I did that in the 70s.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah. What was that bumper sticker? Kill your TV or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been very fortunate to have a life where I've been able to read thousands of books.
Mm-hmm.
And what I often find, especially in this kind of field of intentional life design, so to speak, is that it's beautiful prose many times. And I love reading this material and hearing these concepts and having each author kind of talk about it in their own unique way and
yeah.
things unlock in terms of the theory and the understanding. But oftentimes what I'd walk away with at the end of the book is, so now what? Like, what do I really do? Like, I understand more of the theory now, but what's the next step? What's the how,
yeah.
you know, and not the what. And so I think that's really what psychology brings to the table, is teaching people that, again, from a spiritual perspective, that we are living in a sea of energy, you know, and that we are vibrational beings and we're always casting off vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And how there's really two ways to know really what vibration we're putting off. One is going to be through our emotions, mm-hmm. right? Emotion, energy, and motion.
Yeah.
And then the other one is going to be what's in our life right now, what's
exactly.
being manifested,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah, you magnetize people and events to you according to your consciousness.
That's it. That's it.
And it's fairly simple. And you know, the only way out is through forgiveness. You have to forgive yourself for creating that reality.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to forgive the people that interacted with you to create that reality.
See, because you're releasing your resistance at
yeah.
that point.
And then your power comes back.
That's it.
That's the only way to get your power. Yeah. You're not going to get it by external means and try
right.
and force these other people.
That's
to
the illusion.
And
yep.
You got to pull everything back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
the only way out.
Are you familiar with David Hawkins?
Yeah.
Power versus Force?
Yeah.
Right? That really helped unlock a lot for me, looking
yeah.
at his scale of consciousness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted, now, this is going to go on another much deeper level, but in my work, we do the transpersonal release sessions where we clear past life trauma, childhood trauma, and we actually hook people into the lifetimes that were really benevolent and positive and very high frequency to bring that knowledge back into.
Mm-hmm.
But what we keep coming up with over and over is this really interesting thing, and it's from 3 to 7 people get traumatized.
Mm.
And the trauma, there's different levels to the trauma. One, it could be a father or a mother or
mm-hmm.
even ritual abuse and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another level to it even more. There's something in that person
mm.
that caused them to do that to the kid, to
mm.
the child.
Mm-hmm.
And so people that are coming in that are very powerful light workers
mm.
and they get traumatized at a very early age to shut them down.
Yeah.
To shut that energy down. And even if you remove the unseen negative influence out of the element, it's still there. That trauma's still happening.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to that level. But I've always said there's so much in humanity on on the planet because there's so much non-human interference.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And especially the people that incarnate from very high levels of consciousness, these other entities, and they will come through friends, family, and lovers, and whatever, will come in, and they will just make your life hell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard because you've got to deal with that. And some of it's so heavy.
Yeah.
And you're a three-year-old. I mean,
right.
You know, at this level, it's nothing, but you're 3 years old. And
oh, yeah.
You've got some dark being or some crazy person doing weird stuff, you know, mm-hmm. traumatizing you. It's like, mm-hmm. You know, what are the best techniques to help people, like, get through that, to get through those patterns?
That's a good question. So a couple things are coming to my mind as you were talking. One is I'm thinking of like a shamanic practice of soul retrieval.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
That when we have these experiences, regardless of the age,
yeah.
that it's like a part of us almost like chips off like a fragment
yeah.
and gets stuck energetically. Uh-huh. And so being able to work with a shaman or an energy healer to kind of bring that back is very powerful. Often,
don't squeeze the shaman.
Yeah. Oftentimes, I'll do, you know, again, some of the phrasing here is kind of trite and overused, but like inner child work
yeah.
is really big.
Yeah. It's important.
It is, because wherever we go, we're the one person that we can never escape from.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we can learn to either be our best friend or our worst enemy. And that
yeah.
choice is always up to us.
Yeah, I had some things happen as a child to me, and luckily I had... these Palladians were talking to me when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was this, and it's kind of a family thing. They follow my dad, and ships are always around. And it was mm-hmm. this, but I would sit on these big granite boulders up in the desert, mm-hmm. and they would talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell me what's really going on,
mm-hmm.
and the real dynamics behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could depersonalize it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'd say, oh, this is from a past life here. This is where this happened.
Mm-hmm.
This is where, and that's why that person is behaving this way. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it now. And so at a very early age, I could depersonalize a lot of stuff because
mm-hmm.
I had some great guidance. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of came in that way. But without that guidance, I really felt sad about people that didn't have that guidance or didn't have that understanding. And now in the school systems, none of that is...
Yeah.
Is there. That's the saddest thing. They don't teach universal law in the schools. They don't
right.
teach the basics. They don't teach people that you do have guardian angels, whatever you want to call it. You do
mm-hmm.
have beings watching out after you, and you can have a conversation with God. You know?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
can have your own personal contact.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have a go-between. You know?
Right.
And
that's
they don't
right.
teach any of that stuff.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice if you were kids and you're like, okay, metaphysics 101.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's one of my dreams here. I want to create, we have another 30 acres down there, and I want to create like a Montessori school, but even
oh, cool.
beyond that, even
oh.
beyond that.
Yeah.
Little Jedi training center. Mm.
Yeah, that'd be neat. It's a great name.
Yeah.
Why don't I take a minute and kind of walk folks through the history of psychology and kind of where we
yeah.
are right now
right.
in the phase of things. So good old Freud kind of started
yeah,
this off
yeah.
a little over 100 years ago, right? And you have folks, you know, sit on the couch and you talk about their dreams, and he was really the instigator to kind of saying how your past influences your present
yeah.
and to go within,
uh-huh.
right? And then Jung comes along, and he was the first real pioneer kind of bridging together psychology and spirituality.
Yeah.
Certainly a mentor
yeah.
of mine.
Yeah.
And so fast forward to about the 1950s or so, if you've taken a Psych 101 class, you learn about conditioning, right? Classic conditioning with Pavlov,
yeah, yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and operant conditioning
oh, yeah.
with Skinner, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so these behavioral principles then were starting to be applied clinically with clients. And some of these interventions are still used today. And so that was what was called the first wave of therapy. And then in the 1960s came the cognitive revolution.
Yeah.
And as computers really started to take off, they were seeing a comparison between how computers think and how people think. And mm-hmm. Skinner called this the black box in terms
oh,
of thoughts
yeah.
of, I don't really yeah. want to deal with that. That's too hard to measure.
Yeah.
Let's stick with what's observable with behavior, right? And so Aaron Beck was a real pioneer along with some others. And he started cognitive therapy
mm-hmm.
and really looked at how our thoughts play such a critical role in how we view life and this big important skill of being able to reframe things, to look at things differently. As Wayne Dyer said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.
Yeah.
Right? So that's kind of a blending of the psychology and spirituality.
Exactly.
So that continued, and then in the 70s or so, they started bridging these two together. Of, wow, maybe we can put cognitive with behavior therapy. So they did that, and they called it CBT. Mm-hmm. And this is still considered the gold standard for a lot of conditions to this day. Mm-hmm. Between depression, anxiety, addictions, the list goes on. So if folks are interested in therapy, I encourage them to look up cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay.
Then in the late 70s or so, there's a guy that comes on the scene. His name is Jon Kabat-Zinn. And he, long story short, ended up plucking out mindfulness from its Eastern Buddhist context and started applying it in Western clinical settings. And then soon afterward, that was like late 70s or so, early 80s, two big names, among others, come onto the scene. Marsha Linehan, who ended up founding Dialectical Behavior Therapy, or DBT. It's another name folks should be familiar with. And Stephen Hayes, who started Acceptance and Commitment Therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of started seedlings in the 80s. 90s, they really started getting their work kind of cobbled together. And then in late 90s or so, they kind of put it out to the world. So between late 90s and maybe early 2000s, a lot of research really started pumping forward. And this was called the third wave. And so that's kind of where we are now. That's considered avant-garde to some degree of incorporating mindfulness and then what are called acceptance-based strategies. Now where we are is we're starting to look on the horizon of what's next. And this is, folks are now wondering like, well, what's the fourth wave going to be? And that's kind of where I'm going with all this. And energy medicine is now kind of considered to be what that fourth wave might be by certain people. So emotion freedom technique, I don't know if you're familiar with that, EFT or tapping.
Yeah.
I've looked pretty extensively at the research, especially as it relates to trauma. It's very promising. So you have that. You also have EMDR, the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That's very powerful. So that's kind of where we are right now in psychology. And really what I want to, if nothing else, kind of be the initiator and to start is potentially, dare I say, a fifth wave.
Yeah.
And what I want to do with this fifth wave is kind of usher in this kind of furthered blending between psychology, but you're using it in more of a spiritual way, kind of blending it more with these metaphysical properties and this understanding of how can I use psychology to better manage my thoughts, my emotions, and my behavior, but from the lens or the framework of vibration, right? Because frequency is everything.
Exactly. I've seen there's a device now, and I forgot the name of it, but it's pretty amazing, but it monitors all your neuropaths and your brain waves and everything else. And now they're healing people from all kinds of things by just opening up these neural pathways, and it does it through frequency and energy. I'm going to find out more about that, but maybe I'll get one of the people on the show.
That'd be great. That sounds interesting.
I've been seeing these amazing things, how we actually have these little blocks and these pathways in our brain. And once you open those up, all of a sudden people have like spontaneous healings. They have things just go away. And it's another strange way of removing the blocks, you know, getting the brain fully operating again. I'm going to look more into that. There's so much technology now, and I know that I've done work with people and taken them through the process, and then I asked their higher self to reformat the brain. And they'll have like ADD or some weird thing like that. All of a sudden, they just create a whole new network.
Cool.
And then they're fine. You know, like no drugs and everything. But a lot of times when that happens is that they go, oh no, you know, because I'm on disability, I'm getting all this money and everything else. And now they have to act like they still have it. You know,
it's them in a pickle, huh?
Yeah, so they can keep getting their checks, you know. It never ceases to amaze me. And you never know when it's going to happen. Like one person will have an amazing spontaneous healing or whatever, and another person nothing, you know. And I was tell people, I go, you know, it's between you and spirit what happens.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best to be a conduit
yeah.
for the energy or whatever, but I don't have any control over the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's between you and
right.
the creator.
Right. Yeah, you know, as we start really, you know, looking at the research and applying that more to this fourth wave, you know, energy approach,
yeah.
it's very promising, especially from the standpoint of how speedy recovery can happen. You know, mm-hmm. some of the studies that I've looked at, especially for trauma with like EFT, one session, two sessions tops a lot of times, and people are just symptoms gone. And it's remarmable.
You know, when I was at Gosford Glyphs, I twisted my ankle really bad. And I was joking around as we went there. I go, watch out for those rocks. They're mm-hmm. deadly, you know. We're mm-hmm. making that parody.
Yeah.
And right after that, I hit a rock and it flips over into this hole and leaves and messed my ankle up. And, you know, I went back over to the main mother tree there and I just put my foot right on the root. And I just said, you know, I don't need this. I said, I don't need this medicine. You guys can have it back, you know. It was really funny because I was hobbling over there to get to the tree, and I sat on there, and everybody's waiting, you know, coming back. I was ahead of the others, and they saw me, you know, like really hobbling. I just got up and started walking again, and they go, "What happened to your foot?" And I go, "It's fine."
And cool.
It's like done. You
yeah.
know, in that moment, and we have the ability to do that. We can't.
Right. Right.
And you know, it's the same thing. I got bit by a brown recluse, and.
Ooh.
The masters came in and just said, "You can have it any way you want." I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "They said just thank the spider for the medicine and give it back to the earth. You don't need it. I don't need it." And you know, it started off with two little points, and it started kind of turned like hamburger. And I thought, "Oh, that can get really bad."
Oh yeah.
And all of a sudden, it just shrank back down again.
Wow.
Away,
wow.
You know, so, but we have that ability. We just, you know, it's. Mm-hmm. You know, we just don't use it, we don't practice it, or we don't have the belief or the faith in it.
Yeah. Have you heard the name Joe Dispenza? Does that ring a bell?
Definitely, yeah.
So So there's kind of the big three that are my mentors. So Greg Braden, Joe Dispenza, and Bruce Lipton.
Yeah.
And I'd love to kind of.
Bruce is great.
Yeah, he's so nice. Oh my gosh.
Character.
Yeah. And Joe is now starting to expand his seminars that he does to a full week. Because he's seen so much healing that can happen, that it went from a 3-day to, I believe now it's a 5-day intensive. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the theory is if you can raise the frequency in the room, that healings can happen much more quickly.
Exactly, and that's what happens here in the conference building. Here the building itself is actually built a certain way to raise the frequency. It's a very high frequency place, and that's why people do have these spontaneous healings here. There's a real science to it. And those two is if you can take people, I've taken people in meditations, I just take them back. Mm. Okay, let's go back to when you were really healthy, when you're running on the beach, or you're running in the forest, or, you know, you're back at a kid where you had no pains, no aches, or anything. And, and they're in their meditation, they're going back, and then all of a sudden they come out of the meditation, they go, "Oh, my back pain's gone."
Mm,
you know,
cool.
Or my knees.
Yeah.
And he's working. What happened?
You know?
And it's weird, the dynamics of that. But
yeah.
if you can go back to a time when you were whole and hold that focus and collapse time, you'll have a spontaneous healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When I used to run my chronic pain group, sometimes I'd lead the clients in the group through a visualization kind of similar to that. And boy, sometimes people would come out of that and their fibro would be gone.
Yeah.
You know, for at least the rest of the session, if not the rest of the day.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, part of that's, I think, again, from a spiritual perspective, is we're changing the frequency of what they're putting off during those moments. You know?
And I think you can go back in time and merge with it.
Yeah.
Your physical body can
merge. Yeah.
And that's what happens here. A lot of times when we're doing the Yigong, people are sitting there holding that pose, and all of a sudden you see right through them. You see the chair, and all of a sudden they're non-physical anymore.
Yeah.
And I go, if you can do that, why when you come back into the physical, why do you bring the disease with you?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just a pattern, you know, but some people can do that and the disease goes away.
And that's what, you know, is so exciting, especially from like an Eastern perspective of, we're just playing with energy.
Yeah.
That's all.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And Greg Braden kind of talks in depth about this. If he's shown videos before of folks kind of with like a tumor, you know, going to China, and you have practitioners over them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or Lepton's work of like epigenetics, you know, and that you can turn on and off gene expression.
Yeah.
Deepak Chopra is working with some researchers at some Ivy League schools, and they've fine-tuned the blood paneling so in depth that at this point they can tell just from looking at a basic blood panel with certain factors that they're exploring whether or not that person is meditating or not. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I love this kind of further marriage between science and spirituality.
I love that here because we have technology here that we use to actually peer into the fourth dimension. You know?
Oh, wow.
And see the orbs and beings and all that stuff walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just validating what we already we know, you know, because we've been working with it for so long. But now you've got technology catching up and validating that this is real. And,
exactly.
Yeah, I love that. I love when science and technology merge. And that's what I think we're trying to do here, as we are doing it here, basically, is we're right on the cutting edge of a lot of this technology, and we'll be able to work with it soon. There's a few things we have to get in order first, but some of these healing technologies and the ability to, you know, even they have technology now where you can just put your hand in a little box and it'll tell you what's happening with every organ, every whole field, you know, where anything's not working right. So, I mean, there's just so much new technology out that's validating what they've been talking about in the East for thousands of years.
Yeah, like HeartMath is another one that's coming to mind, where they have technology that if you meditate in very specific ways, you know, our heart gives off a certain frequency. And of course we have brain waves, right? And if we can entrain our brains to be in the same frequency resonance as the heart, we get into a state of what's called coherence. And I have one of their little devices at work, so I'll use that sometimes with trauma clients. And it's profound, some of the impacts that you can have, that it's not talk, it's not just words, you know, that might sound woo-woo to someone who's not familiar with it. But if they can put that little clip on their ear and they see in real time, whoa, here's my heart rate variability, you know, and I'm, and then what I'll do is I'll walk them through kind of different exercises, I'll record it, and then afterward I'll kind of show them the screen and I'll say, okay, here's when I was having you think about the trauma, for example, and you see the jaggedy lines, you know, and then here's when I had you calm down and get into a place where you can breathe like in and out of your heart, for example, and then all the lines become smooth and then they get into that state of coherence. And what's exciting about that is that then it empowers them, right? To then, oh, well, I can practice this on my own. And then they start to have more control over their body state, which is huge, right?
When I was a kid, I used to get a stethoscope and I put it on there. This is my heart. And I'd feel my heart way down.
Oh, there you go.
And then I went and I had to see this doctor once because I slipped my wrist. There's a big scar right there, but it was accidental. I was using one of those scraper tools, and the blade broke.
Oh, no.
Cut, slash right there. It was really a mess. But it's actually on the palm right there. But the, and so I go in there, you know, it's like really ugly. You know? And I go in there and they patch me all up. And so they start like asking me all these questions. So how's your family life? How's your... I didn't slip my wrist. It was a razor blade broke on me.
It was an accident.
Yeah,
I swear.
He goes, well, I have to ask these questions, you know. But he was checking my pulse and everything, and he goes, hey, "What are you, a turtle?" Like this. It was really funny. He goes, "You should be going, you know, racing." You know?
I've practiced biofeedback, doctor.
Before they had the machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Stethoscope. But that's coming out. There's so many different things coming out, but the some of the newest stuff, I'm just blown away at it. You know, they've got such quantum healing devices right now that are out there, and I think eventually, you know, with you hear the stories of Corey Good talking about, and all these other people I know that are part of those programs where they have these med beds and people are healing limbs and regrowing limbs and all that stuff, and those are here. They're on the planet now. I think those are going to come into play here, you know, probably, I think, in the next couple of years.
That's exciting. Yeah. So, it's time, right?
It's I know they've released the patents on a lot of the stuff, so it can come out. So
cool.
So yeah, I can't wait to see this.
Mm-hmm.
See some of the things coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see that. You see people in wheelchairs, and you see people, you know, missing a limb and stuff, and you go, you know, it shouldn't be this way.
Yeah.
We can fix this. You know.
Yeah.
We have the technology now to do that. Why is it not available?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's coming. I wanted to get back to we were talking about the secret and a lot of these things, and I see a lot of these New Age teachings out there and a lot of affirmations and things like that. But and when they're doing this stuff, they put just an affirmation on something, it's like a
right.
It's not even a Band-Aid.
Yeah, or the vision board, right? That's kind of another common
things
one.
Things like that, and just go, you know. Hugger, you got to go deep. You got to go really find out why.
That's where psychology comes in,
yeah,
see?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not that easy. It's not, it takes, but I know it's a lot easier now because the veils are much thinner. It's, things are vibrating faster.
Mm-hmm.
We can heal things much quicker than we used to. And I think everything's accelerated. But on the flip side, karma's being accelerated too.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get away with things that...
Be wary, right?
Yeah. It's like instant karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... And that's happening, too. You know, what I've seen lately, too, is so interesting, and... You know, I wanted to get into this, that... In especially the field of spirituality and ufology, mainly ufology, there's these patterns going on there, and I'd love to get your take on that.
Mm-hmm.
That... I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen so much competition and narcissism and there's planned opposition. There's people that are paid to do that,
yeah.
You know, to control the narrative,
right?
And things like that. And what would you suggest to people that are trying to seek out the truth? You know, really find out what's really happening.
I still struggle with that myself.
Yeah.
I can't. I wish I had more to give. I mean, I think this has been some, I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, one of the things that
yeah.
my mom and I really used to do together that we would bond is we'd listen to Coast to Coast with Art Bell. And I love those stories, you know, with Bigfoot and UFOs and kind of all that. It was just fascinating. It planted a seed of interest for me.
Wow.
And then when kind of more recently with, you know, Corey Good and kind of all the bigger names that are out there in the field. And I thought, wow, you know, all this is really interesting. But then I'd see the backbiting and the contention and all of this drama.
Uh-huh.
And it turned me off, honestly, because you start to question of like, okay, so I'm starting to listen to this person and what they're saying is really interesting. And maybe this person knows the truth or is kind of real. And then all of a sudden you hear kind of the horror stories of like, no, this person isn't it's a plant or whatever. And at some point it kind of just makes you throw up your hands and say, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
And there are major Trojan horses in the field.
I mean,
they're there as a Trojan horse. And,
right.
And you got to be careful of that. And, you know, I always tell people there's a lot of safeguards involved. One, just know that the narrative is totally controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And the mainstream media is there, you know, all these ancient whatever shows, they're there to make money. They're mm-hmm. there to entertain.
Yeah.
They're not there to really educate you.
Yeah.
And that's not their goal. And that there is a Rockefeller initiative where mm-hmm. they are totally controlling that narrative.
Oh, wow.
And then there's spin-offs from that. And mm-hmm. then it comes down. You see all the people involved in that,
mm-hmm.
which are a lot of the key people that mm-hmm. are... the key people in the ufology, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. And then you have these people that are authentic, you know, and a
yeah.
lot of women that are very tuned in and coming from the heart and really know what's going on, and they just get shoved out of the good old boys club of that controlled narrative.
Yeah.
And I always tell people just, you know, stay in the heart. It's the same thing with the higher dimensional beings, UFOs and everything else. You know, we have to make our own personal connection with spirit. Nobody's going to do it for you.
Yeah.
And have your own contact. You know,
mm-hmm.
do your own research.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out what's real out there.
Mm-hmm.
And beware of the buzzwords when they stop name dropping
mm-hmm.
these very same people.
Yeah.
have a very incredulous past, you might say. I don't want to go there, it's pretty dark.
Mm-hmm.
But these same people are behind these movements, and you know, follow the money.
Yeah.
You know, and watch how people behave off stage. How do they treat, you know, the friends and family and everything else.
You know that disclaimer, for entertainment purposes only?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think of when I am listening to all these different folks, because I find the stories absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
But how am I going to be able to decipher what's accurate and valid and what's not? You know, you really can't. And so much is kind of based on personal testimony, too. But
I think if you really go within the heart, we have our own built-in BS meter.
Right, our guidance system.
And you're in touch with the soul, and you're on a heart level, you can feel.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel where somebody's authentic.
Yeah.
And people make mistakes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's along the way, you know, it's all percentages, but if somebody is, you know, doing the best they can and they have a high percentage of accuracy and truth, you know, it's good to listen to them. But like you're saying, what does there come from? Does there come from fame, money?
Right.
Do I want to create a following? You know, am I trying to exact self-worth by having all these other people think I'm cool? You know, like what is your real come from here?
Yeah.
You know, what's your goal? And that's what I've seen, the come from is not correct with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've been fortunate to attend just a couple of these conventions, but to spend just a few minutes of connecting with some of these people and talking to them and, you know, whatever you can get from a few minutes, but I can start to kind of lock in a little bit of just, you get that feel, like you're saying, you know, of, this person's authentic and they give off a really good vibe, or, there's something kind of off here. My spidey sense is tingling, you know?
And we're going into a whole new territory right now, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, a lot of people don't have any reference points for what's happening to them, and some people are they're framing it incorrectly because they don't have the reference points, you know. So some people are, something may have been very bad. Well, maybe it wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was scary.
Yeah.
And but maybe at the end result it was something good. You know, you don't know. They're so
right.
And you don't know who's who, and it's not all ETs. We have a saying, just because you're dead doesn't mean you're enlightened, and just because you're an ET doesn't mean you're benevolent.
Yeah.
So,
there you go.
So you know, and so you do have to develop your own inner sensitivity and your BS meter to figure out who's for real out there.
Yeah.
And that's so important right now. I just got the signal from our producer.
Okay.
Robert over here, that we're 5 minutes out. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you and follow your work or get involved? I know you've got all kinds of things happening right now.
Yeah, a lot of fun projects coming up.
Yeah.
So I'm most active on Facebook. So it's just facebook.com/Dr. Alex Bloom. Post a lot of memes. I love making memes.
Yeah, I saw some of your memes recently.
Yeah, yeah. My friends call me the meme god, so that's kind of fun.
Be sure to send me those memes whenever you post them.
Okay, I'll do that. So Facebook, and I'll have more information there when I get my course up. I'm thinking probably in the next couple months it'll be all finished and uploaded and ready to go, so I'm really excited about that. Have a YouTube channel.
Uh-huh.
So again, same, just type in my name and it'll pop up. And I'm on, you know, pretty much all the social medias, but those are my top two. Website, same thing, dralexbloom.com. But my YouTube channel, there's really two main focuses. So one is kind of unpacking more of this material like we're talking about.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one. And then the other is, I went to Egypt this past March.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd bring that up.
Yeah. And the experience absolutely changed my life. And I wish I had more time to talk about it, but real briefly, there was so much of a following when I was there, and I'd post some pictures and people expressing interest in wanting to know about my journey every single day. So I'm going to be breaking that down on my channel, and then I'm actually leading a tour this coming fall, and it's going to be, we don't have the exact dates nailed down yet, but roughly mid-October to early November, and it's going to be pretty incredible. So maybe, James, if you're inclined, you should come.
I'd love to,
So we're going inside the Great Pyramid. We get the good fortune of going inside the Sphinx enclosure. Less than 1% of the people who tour there are able to do that. The theme of the tour is really going to be blending spirituality and psychology together, what the ancients believed, again, how we can practice some of these principles in our everyday life. It's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, I want you to get your friend on the show. Maybe both
yes.
of you can come together.
That'd be great.
And talk about that. We'll have a whole new show about that.
Yeah.
Some of the things that he... And he was one of the guys that deciphered a lot of the hieroglyphs at...
That's right.
Yep. The star glyphs and the other things there mm-hmm. as well, so... That's another whole show in itself.
I know, yeah.
But anyway, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me
awesome
on.
Awesome, and
good time.
We'll have to get you back on soon.
I'd love to.
All right, James Gillen signing off with As You Wish Talk Radio and East City Stargate. Keep an open mind, a loving heart, and pure intent. That's all you need to get through these times. Good night.